I've been to Mount Sinjar. I've been to Sinjar City. I've been in the Yazidi camps. The camps that I went into, the Yazidis in 2014, they're still in the same camps. They're in the same tents. Yeah. It's brutal there. It's grim.
Welcome to Crossing Face, the largest multi-faith podcast in existence, months running. We are very lucky today to have Congressman Frank Wolf, who is a longstanding representative of human rights, advocate for vulnerable populations, religious populations all over the world, USERF commissioner. We've been in the same room multiple times, but he's been so busy focusing on human rights that I've been just a blur, I think, in throughout his career. But I'm overjoyed to have him on the podcast to speak to our constituency and to speak to our listenership. Welcome, Congressman.
Thank you. Glad to be with you. Thank you for having this. I appreciate it very much.
We asked you on here because we wanted to kind of, we talk about religious freedom all the time, and we just got coming off the heels of the IRF summit. And heading towards the summer, which generally is ministerial and some of those things that happen. But and these views are your own. They're not representing any entity at this point. We're just talking as private citizens. But I wanted to kind of just to ask you and pick your brain, what is the status of religious freedom? Our constituency is aware of IRFA and your involvement of IRFA. I've spoken about you prior to this conversation. We are at the 25th anniversary of the International Religious Freedom Act, and USERF is living and breathing. The offices at state are living and breathing, and at USAID. Just from your perspective, you're looking back. Where are we at? What's your idea of, and your sort of readout, if you were going to give a sort of a bottom line up front, where do you see international religious freedom and the United States status with it?
Well, I think we're in a very bleak point. The reality is that there is less interest in the country, in the world, on the issue of religious freedom for all, than I've seen it for a long, long time. Everything that takes place in government, politics, government, is downstream from culture. And what takes place in culture is generally downstream from the church, faith community. And so I see less interest on a lot of faith leaders that they used to be. I remember when we started on IRF 25 years ago at a meeting, we would have Chuck Colson, Chuck was my hero, Chuck Colson, Rabbi Saperstein. Rabbi Saperstein was the first member of Congress, who was first member of chairman of the commission 25 years ago. He became the ambassador, if you will. I believe that the fact that the State Department called ISIS genocide, what was taking place in northern Iraq, was really because of David Sepstein. But you had Bishop Chaput, the Catholic bishop up in Philadelphia. You had Cardinal George, the Catholic cardinal of Chicago. You had Don Argue was there. He was head of the National Association of Evangelicals. You just don't seem to have that anymore. And so I think we're in a very difficult time. I made the comment to you earlier. To give you a way to understand it, during the Carter years and the Reagan years, and Jimmy Carter was a good person, believe me. Maybe he had differences with his policies, but on religious freedom and human rights, he was a giant. The other giant who I admire so much is President Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan, remember, went to the Berlin Wall, tear down that wall. Ronald Reagan called the evil empire.
Yeah.
During the Carter administration or the Reagan administration, no law firm or a lobby firm in Washington would have represented the Soviet Union. None.
We've spoken about this. It's like the idea of representing, I wouldn't say the enemies of the state, but we're talking about the ideological opposite of who we are, right?
Yeah. Now every faith group that your listeners will follow China. Every faith group in China is being persecuted. The Catholic Church is being persecuted. Cardinal Zen is being persecuted. We see the house church leaders having a difficult time. We see
Tibetans, the Uyghurs. Yeah.
The Uyghurs, you have genocide, actual genocide against the Uyghur Muslims. Probably 1 million to 1.5 million are in detention camps, concentration camps. Well, there's a lobby firm in Washington that represents the camera manufacturer that has cameras in all these Uyghur detention camps. Well, I don't see anybody speaking out about this. China wants to change the name of Tibet. So I just don't think you have the Colsons, the Cardinal Georges, the Robbie Georges, the Rabbi Saperstein's, the Don Argues, speaking out the way that they used to. So I think that's about where we are. Wouldn't it be great if we could all come together and ban lobbying for China? Or if you were a CPC country particularly concerned, meaning you're really a bad, you're doing, you can't have a Washington lobby. But why should you allow, not you, but why should we, America, allow a lobby firm that's making the cameras that are in camps monitoring Uyghur Muslims, why should we let them be operating in Washington? I mean, it's just, so I think we're in a very difficult time. The other thing is, I think we need, every couple of months or so, I will read Dr. King's Martin Luther King, Reverend, because he was a religious leader, Reverend Martin Luther King, the letter from Birmingham jail. He expresses deep concern about why didn't the church speak out. We almost need in the faith community a William Wilberforce. William Wilberforce tried to change the political situation in England to get slave trade, but he tried to get the English people to put pressure on the parliament. Dr. King couldn't understand why the church, and I'm sure you read it many times, but read it again or you listen, why the church wasn't speaking out with regard to what was taking place. And if you recall, deep people, it's a letter from a Birmingham jail. Dr. King went to jail for that. We just don't see. So I'd like to see another Dr. Martin Luther King in the faith community. I'd love to see another William Wilberforce. I'd love to see another Chuck Colson. Do you remember? I don't know how old you are exactly, but you remember they were saying, "We shall overcome."
Yeah, I'm 50 years old, but I remember, you know, my father was a freedom rider, and we did a number of events with on human rights, because we translated the Montgomery story into Farsi and Arabic, and was part of the Arab Spring, motivators for the Arab Spring.
Couldn't we all agree to say, okay, couldn't we all agree to say we're going to ban lobbying, particularly former members of Congress too, but anybody lobbying for any law firm that's lobbying for Chinese Communist Party interest. And just to put a plug in the book, there's a book out, it's probably 2 years old now, by Peter Schweitzer called Red Handed. And he names the name. So I think we're in a difficult time now. And who was the person that said it's who writes the songs, not the laws, and to move the nation. And also, I don't think the young people are watching. They're not watching ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, Fox.
Sure.
Everything is through social media. And if they're not hearing it from their religious leaders about how important this is, lastly, and I don't want to get too controversial, but wouldn't it be kind of refreshing to see some religious leaders of all faiths be willing to go to jail? I'm going to be serious. And nothing. If you get a group of religious leaders in Washington and want to go to jail for banning lobbying for China, I'll go with them. I mean, That's why we are, but it's very bleak, and I don't want to get into statistics, but if you look at the number, I mean, everyone mentions Pew survey, you know, sure. It's 80%, 82. Most of my experiences of my feelings have been seeing it myself, touching it. Ethiopian famine, Nigeria. Why can't we get all worked up about what's taking place in Nigeria? There's an inner society report that came out about 6 months ago saying that I think 52,000 Christians have been killed, 32,000 Muslims. Why can't we say a CPC designation, country particularly concerned for Nigeria? We give $1 billion a year to them. But we're not seeing this the way that we did with Chuck Colson, Don Argue, Cardinal George, Robbie George, Bishop Chapeau, Rabbi Saperstein. And we need that. We need that. We need it.
I mean, first of all, your candor is, it's amazing because this is one of those things that I talk about from being involved in, you know, the last 20 years. And then, like I said, I'm 50 years old. So the challenge is there's the leadership isn't there. Before we were recording, I said, we need like a Martin Luther King type of situation where there's a momentum and then faith leaders come and are walking hand to hand in the streets. I mean, those pictures are worth 1,000 words. But behind those pictures was movement, all those constituencies, and then bodies doing work behind the scenes, you know? And so we have mature NGOs. So this is I'm going to play devil's advocate. We have NGOs that are receiving funds. We have a leadership behind the various gatherings and constituencies out there. Congress is you know, they're more or less in session. I'm not, you know, and they have their agendas. But then we also have the Constitution that's screaming religious freedom, our founding principle, right? IRFA. We have all these tools. Then the external tools, the UN and so forth. So one of the elements you see is religious leadership coming together and religious leadership becoming a motivator. The other element you mentioned was social media. You know, there's influencers who aren't religious leaders. There's people out there that have constituencies that are looking for topics. But there's funding out there. Do you think that if we got religious leaders together to talk about these issues, we motivated some the younger population or the young population with social media? Do you think we could build a community of concern around action towards very specific goals? Do you think it's lack of specificity? What would be the motivating factors here? Because Rabbi Saperstein's still around. I mean, you know him, I know him. You know, do we put a call in and see if we could get him to motivate some of the other religious leaders? Where do you think the issue? What do you think the critical element would be?
Well, the answer is, I think it has to be done. Let me tell you, there are a lot of good groups in town that I commend. I'm talking about religious leaders. I'm talking about pastors, rabbis, imams. So, I mean, I think when I used the word, if you heard me clearly, I said the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King.
Right.
He was a religious leader. He was not a group in town that had an operation. So I think the faith leaders have to really be the ones. Look at, you know, Ecclesiastes. Again, I looked, I saw all the suffering under the sun. There was the pressure. You have to, from a religious point of view. So I think you have to sort of narrow it down. Secondly, another issue which we need to get into, USERF's budget. Again, USERF is good. They do a great job. They have a great staff. We have a bipartisan approach. All of our decisions have been really bipartisan. Do you know USERF is being frozen at $3.5 million? It was $3.5 million, what?
Yeah.
15 years ago. It's a 3.5 million. I think if you went and took it, it should be what? I don't know, $5.5 million. So there are a couple of issues that everyone can be rallied around. One is China. Every group in China, Catholic, Protestant, Muslim, Buddhist, Falun Gong. Every group is being persecuted. There are none that are not being persecuted. Also, China is aiding Iran. Iran is giving money to Hezbollah, giving money to the Hamas. So everyone is going to say, I agree with this. I mean, I know. And again, the other one is, why shouldn't the advocacy for USURF, which again, nobody USURF gets paid, to at least keep up to the current level where they would be? Is it 5 million, 5.5 million? But then to try to find, say, 5 or 6 issues and have a summit whereby you bring religious leaders, again, I stress, religious leaders together to kind of deal with this issue. Yes, I think it'd be a great idea. And Rabbi, I believe, and I may be wrong, and Rabbi Saperstein knows how I feel, the Obama administration didn't want to call what was taking place to the Christian community and the Yazidi community genocide.
Right.
I personally believe that it was Rabbi Saperstein, I'm 99.9%, who literally made the difference. That's why USURF is so important. USURF established that ambassador's job.
Yep.
Remember, Seipel had it before, but
yep.
he was filling that job. Also, it has the commission that is willing to speak out and say the truth, not fearful that you're going to be offended or you're going to lose your job, not fearful. Rabbi Saperstein, had there not been the passage of IRF 25 years ago, there would have not been an office. Rabbi Saperstein would have not been in the office. Rabbi Saperstein would have not been able to go in and talk to Secretary Kerry, to his credit, took the word, and they called it genocide against Christians and Yazidis. Today, at this moment, as we speak, 2,700 Yazidi women and girls are still missing from their families. 2,700. I've been to Mount Sinjar. I've been to Sinjar City. I've been in the Yazidi camps. The camps I went into, the Yazidis in 2014, they're still in the same camps. They're in the same tents.
Yes.
It's brutal there. It's grim. So, yeah, I think to have that, now you have the right people to convene it, no partisanship. I think one of the advantages that my best friend in Congress was a Democratic member, Congressman Tony Hall. I was with him 3 or 4 days ago. We see each other. We talk. Keep it bipartisan, but advocate. So why couldn't we advocate to help all the faith groups in China and ban lobbying? I just can't understand why you would allow somebody to lobby for the camera company that puts the cameras in the Uyghur camps. I don't understand. So yes, I think there should be a conference in Washington, but you can't have 15 issues, pick 5 or 6.
Right. The specificity is important.
Specificity. Now we used to, during the 80s, I remember there was a rally in 1987 on the Mall. It was a Sunday. I had a policy when I was in Congress. I didn't do events on Sundays. But I violated my policy because they did a rally for the Jewish community in the Soviet Union on the Mall. I think it was 1987. You can look at the exact date. And Ronald Reagan spoke. I mean, I love Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan was my hero. Ronald Reagan, when he gave the speech, tear down that wall.
Sure.
Nathan, call Nathan Sharansky and ask him. He will tell you that when Ronald Reagan called the Soviet Union the evil empire, he was in Perm Camp 35, and they tapped it out on the wall of what Ronald Reagan said. I went to Perm Camp 35. I talked to Sharansky. And so we need that again. So, yeah, could we get 15,000 to come on the Mall to advocate to help on China, to help the Uyghurs, to help. Yeah, I think we could. And, you know, there are a lot of good people.
An interesting point. I talk about programming with specificity because I spend a lot of time in the field. But it's an interesting element here. You're talking about making sure that we, not only that we have faith leaders coming together and provide their leadership, mobilize their constituencies, but if there's a unifying issue, let's not water it down with 200 issues, 20 issues, 30 issues. Let's go down to this. And we can all say that our constituencies are persecuted here. Therefore, we can come together to advocate on this one, the one issue of stop lobbying for those who are persecuting people who believe or not, the people that believe, that don't believe the change, that want to change it right there, you know? And it's an interesting line, because you're right. All the issues are represented in Washington one way or another, good, bad, or ugly. But it coming together instead of watering your agenda down, but also coupling it with the leadership that's not unified. You know, everybody's sort of advocating on their own issues and getting there on their own little by little. And so it's an interesting take from your perspective, you know, being involved in this from its beginnings, is that there's not enough specificity. There's not enough unity. There's not a lot of leadership motivation. And that's what's causing the enemies of religious freedom to win.
Well, if you pick the one issue of law, if you said you couldn't lobby for China and you couldn't lobby for any country
on the CPC,
designated a CPC country for 3 or more years, give them 3 years, because maybe the lobby firm would tell them you better shape up or you're going to. So, but if after 3 years they're still on, I mean, look to see who that would impact. That would impact on, we now have off the coast from where you are, you could fly to the country in 3.5-4 hours, Nicaragua. The Catholic Church is being purged in Nicaragua. They have kicked out Mother Teresa. I mean, any CPC country should not, after 3 years, have a lobby. If you could bring all the groups together, and how many different countries would that impact? Look at all the CPC and the designation countries. So I think there are a lot of good people out there. And this is not to be anything critical of the groups. It is good to have all the Earth Roundtable, sure, of the groups. But to have the religious leaders, to have the Wilberforces, the Dr. Martin Luther Kings speaking out, then it becomes such a moral issue that the Congress can't. And the Congress, to the Congress's credit, there are a lot of good people. They're motivated by what they're hearing from their districts and what they're hearing. And so if you've never been, you don't quite think, and maybe by doing this, you would encourage a couple of members, good members. Like I told you, I never traveled out of the country until 1984, and I wouldn't have traveled out if Tony Hall had not asked me to travel. So ask some of the people and focus on freshmen and sophomores, because you get a member that's been in for 14, 16, 18 years. He may not want to go live in a camp, you know, so I understand it. But get the new members, and if you could have them travel two by two, a Republican and a Democrat together, seeing what you're interested in. And so find the top 10 countries that you think, and have a group to come together and say, okay, we are going to try to get 20 members, 10 Republicans, 10 Democrats, all freshmen and sophomore, to go to, where do you want them to go? To Tibet? You want to go to Nicaragua? Has there been a delegation down in Nicaragua? You want to go to Cuba? Do you want to go? Where do you want them to go to? And have them go and see and feel and touch and taste. Have them go to Mount Sinjar. Have them live in the camp with the Yazidis. Have them talk to Yazidi families that have lost their. Have them go to Pakistan and talk to the different groups in Pakistan. I think that could change everything. And I'm positive that could change something.
Yeah, I think that's I'm always about faith and action and talking about how, you know, and getting out there into the field. But I think they're right. This, like, the idea of having a renaissance in engagement on the issues to look, to feel. I mean, it was a profound moment early on in your career before you were a congressman, where you were engaging on this travel.
No, I, for 4 years, I was elected in 1980. I had never been out of the country.
You never been out of the country. So this was in your first...
I had never been out of the country before I got elected to Congress, except once I was in Canada. In 1984, after 4 years, all of my issues had been They were transportation. I advocated for federal employees. I worked for a nighttime noise standards at National Airport. Tony Hall, a Democratic member,
calls
got
you
me
up
to
and
go.
says, let's go.
He asked me to go, and I naively agreed and jumped. I got on appropriations, so they allow you to travel anywhere. And I went, and what I saw broke my heart. And then in 85, you may not remember that Ceausescu, it was very dark, and very dark in
A
Romania.
little young, but yeah.
Tony Hall and Chris Smith asked me to go with them to Romania in the summer of 85. And when we came back, what we saw, Hall, Smith, and myself put in a bill to take away most favored nation trading status from Romania. And we did, and Ronald Reagan agreed. So for my first 4 years in Congress, these issues were never issues I was interested in. Only after seeing it and hearing it and talking to the people. And lastly, there were no Ethiopians in Congressman Hall's district. There were no Ethiopians in Chris Smith's district. None. There were no Romanians in Congressman Hall's district. There were no Romanians in Congress Smith's district. And certainly there were no Romanians in my district, in Arlington, or McLean. But we went because we were asked to go by some people. And Tony Hall is the one that kind of triggered the thing. So I think by seeing and feeling and touching and tasting and going, and when you were in a village and you look at the leader, I mean, I got so active in Nigeria because Chris Smith kept talking to me about Nigeria, Nigeria, Nigeria. I when I went and saw it, I mean, have you been to Nigeria?
I
It's
have been at
it's
some point.
and you go and the people say, I've been to Nigeria. I was in Abuja. Oh, I don't mean Abuja. I mean go up to the north.
The Chad River Basin, you get up that way, you're in trouble.
It's a scary. And you remember? And I don't want to diverse too much. You remember hashtag Bring Back Our Girls?
Yes, I do.
That's 10 years ago.
Yeah.
40% of the girls have not come back, and I spoke with their mothers and fathers. I don't know, will they ever see them again? So I think by going and seeing, and a member does not have to have that large group in their district. But if you look at Nigeria, why can't we do something and designate Nigeria as a CPC country? All the commissioners voted to make it a CPC country. Most of the commissioners, Republican and Democrat, have been in the country and have seen it. This should be like a low-hanging fruit, and yet, but I really have not seen many religious leaders in America speak out. And if you look at both Rabbi Cooper, who's our chairman, and Reverend Davey, Fred Davey, both have been and seen it. One a Republican, one a Democrat. They understand it because they've seen it. They've gone outside and gotten outside the region. And if you look at the Inner Society report, 52,000 Christians have been killed and 34,000 Muslims. And that ought to be an issue that is, we can all agree. And yet it's not happening. So
Nobody's,
it's
and
very important.
we talk about it. You know, we know some of these issues, particularly within the Earth community, and there's a lot of people working hard on it. But the key is religious communities, the religious leadership. The key is motivating the Congress people to get out there and see what's going on, so that they can address it from a perspective of specificity, right? Nigeria, let's get it on the CPC. And then we go one step further. If someone's on the CPC for 3 years, they lose their lobby. You know, that's a very interesting mechanism to utilize to advocate for Earth globally. And it's not happening right now. You know, maybe this is the new mechanism that should be established, is, you know, faith engagement globally with the right people. So you have your advocates, but then you have your religious leadership, congressional leaders, and then you're coupling it with advocates that are willing to put everything on the line to institute change within the American political system, and with more specific with the being more specific lobbying. And that's a really that's a it's an interesting it's an interesting avenue. I, you know, didn't think of it. And I've been doing this for 20 years, and I'm like, God, you know, I mean, one of my hopes in talking to you, I'm like, he's got something. He's got something in his pocket. He's going to share. But this is, we weren't talking about this 10 years ago. You know, we weren't talking about this 15 faith, years ago.
The faith community will have to speak before the Congress acts.
Right, right.
They're going to have to.
And everybody has these kids, this faith constituencies within their districts. And even if they don't, IRF serves the Republic and the national security interests of the Republic one way or another. It does.
Do you know the Nigerian community is huge in Houston? Do you know where one of the largest Nigerian communities is? Just outside Washington, D.C., Prince George's County. I think there are 30,000 or more in Prince George's County. You can see Prince George's County from the Capitol. You get up and look at.
But
I think it's very bleak. Right now, we are in a very, and of course, I want to get in a plug for God bless him, Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan and Pope John Paul and Margaret Thatcher brought down the Soviet Union.
Right. Yeah. Well, without a doubt. I mean, I think that, you know, it's a little bit of Gorbachev's naivety.
But they, and you remember, you're not all to remember, Reagan was criticized for the evil empire speech. Oh, boy. The evil empire speech didn't go over well in America, but it went over well in the Perm Camp 35. You should try to get Natan Sharansky to come on your show. He'd do it from Israel. He can tell you. And also, one of the things that Reagan helped do, and Yusuf has, is a prisoner of conscience list. And if you're on that list, Natan Sharansky will tell you that his life got better in Perm 35 camp because the commandant of the camp, Colonel Osten, couldn't understand why all these letters were coming in for Sharansky. And he said, I don't want him to get hurt. So he was almost giving Sharansky more food and helping him because he didn't understand why all these letters were coming in. So for all the faith communities, and a trigger to thought, for all the faith communities to adopt a prisoner of conscience and write them in the prison, write their families. And you know, you should go on and go talk to the churches in Midland, Texas. They came in to see me 25 years ago about Sudan. And I said, what is a church? All the denominations in Midland. They actually went to Sudan. Midland, Texas. Have you ever been to Midland, Texas? It's in the middle of nowhere. It's a big wild country. They were the ones that I give more credits to, the church in Midland, Texas, on the issue of Sudan. Deborah Fikes, remember Deborah Fikes?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. They did more to wake up America on Sudan. And it came out of a little.
Right.
Midland is called Midland because I think it's in the middle part of the state. It's heavy oil. I've been down there. It's nice poor stuff.
Yeah.
That's where Bob Fu lives, actually. Bob, have you followed the church? The Mayflower Church?
I know what it is. Yeah, I do.
Yeah, they just got out of China. They moved to Midland, Texas.
Yeah, really. So yeah, I work with when it comes to religious freedom issues with Fu, and so I think it's interesting that you're making a linkage that only someone like you can, who has this perspective of, okay, you want to know what, and it's like I don't want to devalue. This is amazing. It's you're innovating in real time, right? In this podcast, right? So you're sitting there taking, look, you knew Reagan. I didn't know Reagan. I mean, I grew up in the 80s. So, but you're seeing, you're making these connections to the Russian, the Soviet Union, and how we had this bipolar world and what was going on and what were the motivating factors. You had a designation by a leader, some specificity in actions. And then from there, you were able to topple the regime, right? And so you're like you said, it's a, I was, you know, we're in, you're innovating in real time. You're saying we need, an issue with specificity. We use the mechanisms that are maturized over time, right? With the Earth Movement, the CPC lists, USURF, the Earth Ambassador, all this stuff. And then, but we need to do a resurgence of the missing factor is religious leaders motivating their constituencies. And the Midlands example is a good one, right? Martin Luther King, Dr. Martin Luther King's another one. But right now, there's no critical mass that can build a community of concern that can motivate Congress and the constituencies to institute change in something with specificity, lobbying, for example. You and I were just talking about before we started recording. I said, I'm starting up my campaign about the Kalasha people. And because I've been out of D.C. for this long, I wasn't even thinking from a congressional standpoint. But you're like, get the bipartisan, get a freshman congressperson, who's Democrat and Republican, and get them to Pakistan and have them look and feel it on the issues. And then you can, and then from there, you dangle appropriations. You're going to dangle the funding that goes to Pakistan to save the Kalasha who are going through genocide right now. And so I'm thinking about this. Why didn't I think of that? I'm not beating myself up about it, but that's a real world example of something that can happen right now. And I'm not the motivating factor behind it because no one knows, no one cares. But once you put that issue on the table, it's up to them to make the choice whether they're going to go.
Well, you have a bigger impact than the Midland Church people did, because with the Midland Church people, Washington, you've been Midland is look it up when you get on Midland.
It's middle of nowhere.
Yeah. And they made I give the credit to the special envoy. And keep in mind, George Bush's father lived in Midland, and George Bush, the son, was raised in Midland. That impacted Midland, probably had more, the Midland ministerial, I guess that's what they call all the different congregations, had a bigger impact on Sudan than any of the groups here in Washington.
It's amazing. It's amazing. I want to be sensitive to your time, I would love to have you on again, if that's possible, to talk about what's happening. Sure. And maybe some issues of specificity. We can talk about Nigeria. We can talk about Ukraine. We can talk about some of these other issues. But it's lightning in a bottle. You're like to have a conversation like this with you. Innovating in real time, and the people within the Beltway talk about listen to the podcast, and some of them people ping me back, and they go, we're looking at some, what can you do? And they want more out of what action can I take? And it's like, well, here's one, we have an idea here that comes from not only a thought leader and someone who's not only well respected and has legitimacy and is an elder in the religious freedom movement, but what we just said is, I don't know if it's ever been said before, related to action now, because now is the right time for religious leaders to motivate their constituencies to get involved in an issue with specificity, to address lobbying, to address the CPC, and that maybe restriction if they're on for 3 years. And so I think we have it not only an action item, but we also have something that focusing on prisoners of conscience, adopting one of them, to motivating individuals to focus on supporting a prisoner of conscience, not only to affect their comfort in captivity, but to get them released and to raise awareness. That's something.
Do you remember that after IRFA legislation was passed 25 years ago, there was a group established in, I think they were out in Chicago, and they operated for about 7 or 8 years, and their job was to not take political issues, but to get all faith groups to put on a service to advocate for the persecuted church. And like the National Presbyterian Church, I'm Presbyterian, would have a service at the National Presbyterian. They would bring in somebody from China, somebody from Sudan, somebody from Kenya, and they would advocate. It was a Sunday. You can go back. I forget. Maybe they were in Wheaton, I don't know where they went. They were not connected with any church. They just were established based on the passage of it. And I don't know, does National Presbyterian Church still have that service? I don't even know that they, that they do. There's a great radio station in Washington, WAVA. Don Crow always has something like that, but I think they've gone. They don't have them. And I think the lobbying for China would be so bipartisan because it impacts on literally every faith group in China. And on the, not to get too graphic, but on the Falun Gong, there's a thing that Hudson did 6 months ago. They're taking their organs out while they're still alive, meaning they die. So I think you could do that and then pick, and that way every faith group would be Catholic, Protestant, Muslim, to Tibetan, Falun Gong would all come together, because how do you argue that you should allow the person who makes the camera in the camps that's watching the Uyghurs? And if you get in depth, you look at some of the terrible things that happen. How can they be allowed to have a former congressman and senator lobbying for them? And you can't.
They're representing them. It's crazy. It's crazy, Tom. Well, I appreciate you taking the time. It means a lot for you to, you know, to not only that, your candor, your energy, and on top of that, just being willing to, you know, not talk in the slogans that everybody uses. We're, you know, talk with a specificity and motivation to do something. It means a lot. I appreciate you taking the time,
Congressman. Well, thank you.